Welcome to the Real BS Show. We're going to start off with a few tunes, but in honor of and for our music director, Mike Hutzel. He's a big, giant part of the Distance Band. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
This is for you, Mike. Thank you.
This is the Real BS Show.
That song there was really written for our guitar player, Gary Taylor, who died all of a sudden.
Right.
Kind of surprised us all. So Mike wrote that song for him. And then He's got a couple more here we'd like to play that that he wrote himself and did most of everything.
Right.
We might have done a little bit of singing or playing, or guitar playing, but
right.
I think Gary helped out on Time Is Flown.
Yeah, he did. I think he did provided harmonies, and he had a guitar on it, guitar work on it. And then we have two other songs that Gary wrote as well.
Oh, yeah, we'll play those too. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's hear what Mikey came up with.
Outside the Saigon Lounge on my last night in this town, I stand alone as I watch the sun go down and shed a tear for all those things I never found. But oh, time has flown. I step inside and I revel with the crowd. They're singing dances, I live my life out loud. But all too soon I'm on the road, I've traveled miles, and oh, the time has flown. It's only now that I realize I need you, like a song from the past played old. It's only now that I realize I need you. I have been, who have embraced me and held me close to them. Wish we could all go back and do that all again. But oh, time has flown. I'm not the boy I was or the man I ought to be. Endless regrets and vague apologies. I thought I'd have the time to set these devils free. But oh, time has flown. It's only now that I realize I need you, like a song from the past played old. It's only now that I realize I need you.
This is the Real BS Show, and we're kind of looking back on
having some memories. Yeah,
memories of some of the songs that we've done over the year, over the last couple of years, really. And
during COVID, we put together a bunch of songs together from guys that Bill knew, and we all became good friends. I think it's still ongoing. We're still working on stuff, and
yeah.
We did lose Gary, and
that was a surprise, a shock, and really sad.
Yeah, it's a it's still something I remember having many conversations with him, and he had a lot of interesting ways of doing things, you know, new ideas. He brought songs. He was a songwriter, so he had a lot of cool
ways. Well, I had to struggle with him a little bit because he didn't want to play electric guitar.
Right.
Because it's been so long. And
he did a good job.
Yeah, I kept pushing him and pushing him, and he kept hacking away at it. And between all of us, we come up with some nice stuff, I think. And, his acoustic playing was always okay. He kept at that all those years.
Right, right.
The electric thing, it'd been 20, 30 years since he'd picked that up.
But in the end, you know, it's like, you know, when you put all this stuff together, you know, we mixed it together, and it's like, you know, that was a lot of, I look back at it, we'd spend maybe 2-3 weeks at the most on a song sometimes, I think, you know.
Oh, yeah, we put a lot of work into them, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, so you get to know kind of how they work, and Gary was, you know, he had a lot of songs he wrote, and same with Mike. There was a lot of songs that both wrote, and they both had experience. You have your experience you brought to the table, and it's like, you know,
it was a good teamwork, I think, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was good teamwork, really. Right. I talked to Gary every week for an hour or more.
Right.
On his way home from band practice, and
right.
You know, this all of a sudden one week he wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And shortly after that he died.
Yeah,
boom.
Yeah.
Surprise of all surprises. So
he definitely that went quick. It was like I remember you calling me about that. And you know, he had also a history of wrestling. He was a wrestling coach.
Three-time. He's a legend.
Yeah.
Jeez.
College wrestling coach. I mean, he won 3 championships. Am I right in that?
Well, he was number 3. All-time winningest coach in NCAA Division I history.
Wow.
And it was at a small school, too. Like an Ivy League kind of thing. And for him to accomplish all of that and you know, just the recruiting and the training of the guys, and
right.
He was all about it. I mean, he was into it, serious, big time. And I think his wife wished he would have took a high school job instead of a college job. You know,
right.
Because he was just gone all the time.
Yeah.
But he did 39 years at Rider University, and
right.
That's amazing. He stuck it out all that whole time.
Right,
but he left a legacy, that's for sure. So, and he also liked, you know, to write music. And this next song is, I think was it Wounded Soldier? Yeah, that's the one coming up.
Yep.
He wrote that. He wrote quite a few of them, but we never got a chance to get around to all of them.
Right.
But we picked out a couple here, and we'll let you have a listen to his talent. Definitely, yeah. It was, at first, you know, some of the songs, like this one, Wounded Soldier, I thought, geez, this ain't going nowhere, you know. I was a little confused about but once we got it put together and all the parts in there.
It turned out way different than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, well, because it starts off with just him singing and playing a guitar, you know, and that's all you know.
Yeah.
But then when Mike gets a hold of things, he really...
Yeah,
he really adds to it big time.
Right, and then I threw the drums in. He said, "Wait for the drums," and I was like, "Okay, well, I understand," but it's like, man, there's a lot of gap there. But then when we were finished with it, that gap made sense. You know?
So he got what he wanted. That's for sure. He was thinking about this all these years, you know, and finally we added to it what he wanted, and it came out, and he was really happy with it. And both these songs we're going to play came out the same way. He was just envisioning, but with Mike's talent of adding, you know, musical parts and sounds and stuff to it, it just came out really well. So let's listen to Wounded Soldier, and we'll take it from there.
I can
circles like that trick. But in a moment they'll come apart to true amazement to the eyes of all the people that we once knew. But on you came like a wounded soldier, so careless, bleeding, holding on to your gentle longing to strange twist of fate. You were there when I needed you most. All the sorrows of your own shattered dreams that had their own. Yeah.
we're back with the real BS show.
Yeah, no BSing.
No, well, we're just fumbling and mumbling around.
Yeah.
Kind of reminiscing, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
The next song we like to play is Gary's original, and I guess he kind of musically directed the whole thing, but Mike put in all the major.
Yeah.
Major new parts that
right.
he didn't see coming, but once we cut it all together, it was beautiful.
This is probably, in my opinion, of all the songs we've done so far, this is one that hit me. You know, they say art can hit you emotionally, and this one hit me emotionally. It just had that feeling to it, and the lyrics. I resonated with this song a lot. It made me think a lot. You know.
I never really dug into it or asked, you know, really screened Gary about how this song came about and what it was. I never really, you know, dug into how it happened.
From what he told me, because I did ask him, I was like, what's the meaning behind this song? And it was about his wife. You know, he's wishing that, you know, it's symbolically asking Leonardo da Vinci to paint his wife because he can't, you know, help him paint his wife because he can't do it alone. Huh. And that's what
I didn't know.
I'm paraphrasing. I'm not saying exactly how he said it, but it's kind of has a, you know, it's a romantic song because he can't represent her how he wants to represent her. That's kind of, it's like, so it's a romantic song towards anybody. But it could be even for even someone that you lost. That's you kind of put it that way. So I, in a weird way, after he passed away, we were going to send this for his funeral. But I ended up using it for my son's grandfather's funeral, and it fit perfectly because, yeah. You know, it's a kind of a solemn song, I think.
I went to his funeral, and there was so many people there. Holy yeah. smokes.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was mostly sports people, wrestling, all kinds of wrestlers from everywhere.
Just, right.
And it was, and to try to get them to, I handed out a few CDs, but, you know, to his brother and to Doug Klinovich and a few CDs here and there that people I knew would have wanted to hear those.
Right.
But I didn't pressure the funeral director to play that song at the, you know, out at the funeral site, you know, out at the graveyard.
Yeah.
I just thought, nah, just stay out of it, you know. Hopefully they know what they're doing. And,
right.
And it was just so many people. Holy smokes, geez.
Yeah. He was a very well-known guy, yeah.
Yeah, well, rightfully so. I mean, he had an effect on a lot of people, a lot of young people. And He always said the only way you lose is if you don't learn anything.
Right, right.
He said, because everybody loses.
Yep.
And
that's the truth.
If you don't learn anything, then you did lose.
Right.
But if you learn something, then you're a winner.
That's something that interesting you say that, because when I was helping with his computer, he had I was helping with his computer, and he ended up learning a lot. He actually learned how to use Linux. Of all the things in the world, man.
Well, that's one step ahead of me.
Yeah, I actually installed Linux on his computer because he had a MacBook and it was no longer going to be able to be updated anymore. So I was like, well, you can just use Linux. And he took to it. He was able to watch movies again. He was able to watch YouTube and all these things. And he was able to do his emails. And at first he was nervous, and then he took to it. He took charge of it, and yeah. I was proud of the man. You know, it's like, geez, you know, I think he was like 74, 75.
A year older than me.
Yeah, yeah. And he kicked hard on that. He really pushed hard on that, and it was, we're recording it on Audacity with it. So he was doing the same thing Mike and us were using, you know, all that jazz. So yeah, I mean, he had a quick learning curve, you know. To go on, but he was a good guy, really is.
Yeah, we were really just getting started. I mean, because he had so many songs.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were headed that way, and just out of the clear blue, boom.
Yeah, yeah. Because he had a whole CD. I remember listening to that CD of all the songs he did.
Oh, he sent me a lot of videos of him playing at different places. And
from
stuff.
His iPad.
I still got some of those. They're recorded off on a phone or whatever, you know.
Right.
But at least you got the idea of what he was doing. And it was interesting. So what are we going to... Oh, we're going to play this song.
Yeah.
It's called Leonardo da Vinci.
That's right.
Okay, well, let's listen to that one.
To paint you.
It's the Real BS Show, and that was Gary Taylor, Leonardo da Vinci.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I really like the song myself.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the one that was you didn't really want to add percussion to. I let Mike added a little bit in the beginning and end, but I was like, Gary, I think this needs to be as is. No drums. Because it's just, it's poignant. Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it. This next one you got up here is...
Well, this is just a way to... I'd say let's just end the day with this thing. It's this stoic stuff that I've been listening to,
right,
and trying to figure out, you know, Marcus Aurelius and Seneca Epictetus and all these guys that were very famous philosophers, I guess.
They sometimes call reflections, so you can reflect on them. And it's a good way of kind of like realizing there's two paths you can take your thoughts on. There's nothing wrong with having emotions to something. There's nothing wrong with having that feeling, but it's how you react to that feeling is what's important. And I think this is something that anybody can use. You using it right now. Do you feel better about it?
I think I was already a stoic already, but
now
it's making more sense to me, you know, not to quit worrying about things you can't control, you know. You just got to stop doing that because you're going to end up, you're going to get an ulcer.
Or a heart attack.
Yeah, it's unhealthy, really. Really it is. And
do you feel more relaxed with this at all?
I think so. I just have to listen to this stuff over and over and over again.
Right.
Because there's so much to it that, you know, it's hard to... But I think it's sinking in, and I'm, you know... I think the title of this thing is to stop caring.
Yeah.
Something like that. And, you know, when you get right down to it, you know, at least it sounds right to me. It may not be right for everybody.
Yeah.
And maybe a lot of people think it's stupid.
They might think it's stupid, but you think about it, there's a lot of... If you were to be concerned about every single problem in the world going on at the same time, you would not be able to function. You would never leave your house. So you have to function in the world. There's certain things you can't care about, you know? And it sounds sickening to say, too, but, you know, if you worried about every stress in the world, you wouldn't leave your house. You wouldn't want to do anything.
I mean, like this Israel-Hamas thing, you know... All I can do is watch, and not worry about it and just hope that they do the right things. And, you know, and as far as Hamas goes, I mean, to me, they look like bad guys.
They are.
Very bad guys.
So it's in their charter. You know, this is something, this is not anti-Palestinian when I say this, but it's in the Hamas charter to eradicate Israel completely. And it's just not a feasible aspect. You know, the reality is both have exist, and Israel gave up control of Gaza back in 2006, and this is who they elected, and that's a sad thing.
Palestinians let them take over.
Yeah.
And then Hamas just took all the money and all the aid that was sent there, and they just built tunnels, billions of dollars worth of tunnels everywhere.
Including under hospitals,
and weapons, and holy smokes, it just... But I don't know. There's nothing I can do about it, you know. So why stay awake nights, you know? I just are arguing with anybody, you know.
Here's the other aspect of it. You have enough things that are on your plate in your individual life, in your local area, in your state, that it's impossible to be concerned about everything that's going on in the world, because it's always going to be problems. If you look out through history, when you were younger, they were broadcasting the local news. They might touch a little bit on the national, but international a little bit here and there. But now we're so inundated with so much junk. I'm having a stuttering day. But we're so swarmed with all this information from around the world.
Well, the trouble is that most of the stuff you hear, whether it's on the news, network news, or...
Yeah.
It's a bunch of lies.
Yeah, that's the other problem, is there's a lot of propaganda out there.
What's true? Nobody knows.
But that's why it's like, this is where this is appropriate. Why should you care? Because it's probably propaganda. So I'm going to say a good 75% of what you're hearing on the internet could be propaganda.
Yeah.
And that could be good news or bad news. It could be the truth, but it's still propaganda. So you have to be careful. And so the reality is only you can control what you can control.
You know, I haven't watched television in years.
Same here.
A long time. I canceled my Facebook account 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
I just stopped all of that stuff completely. I just, like, backed up and said, this is nuts.
Yeah.
And so now I still like to watch college football. So,
right.
And if you get on YouTube, you can watch the game. Somebody else, takes it right off, and you can watch the games. But then you also get their commercials,
off
of the national ABC, CBS, and all. And I can tell you that the commercials make absolutely no sense. Most of the time, I have no idea what they're advertising. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with you. Man, I mean, to be honest with you, this is something that I share with you because I don't see ads at all. I use uBlock Origin for blocking ads. And I block ads on my phone with AdAway. So I don't see ads or commercials. And when I go to someone's house and they have a TV playing and there's commercials, the commercials make less sense to me every day because I see them and it's like, what the heck is this junk? It don't make any sense.
Well, commercials are almost half of the of every hour.
Yeah,
or maybe not quite a half, but
it's up
pretty
there.
Close.
And yeah.
Just unbelievable garbage. I mean, what in the world? And that's the way the Stoicism, it says, tone back your entitlements or whatever.
Right.
Don't expect it, and don't wish for everything under the sun.
Right.
And when you see these ads, you think, "Well, who in the world's buying this crap?"
You know? Do you remember QVC?
QVC. That's
on the cable.
Familiar.
They used to sell junk on there.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, but like I never watched it.
But that's an example there. I used to have cable back. 16, 17 years ago.
Selling junk.
Yeah. This junk. There's like junk on there. They'd sell like some sweeper or vacuum and, other tools or ladders and junk. No, you don't need them. You can just go to the store and buy them and it's like you're not getting any deal with them really. But they would sell that stuff on there and people would call in and buy them and it's like.
Well, I think, 10 years ago I did call in and I did buy something. Then when I got it, I wished I hadn't.
I said,
oh, this is stupid. Why did I do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, that a long time ago, I quit that. But, it's just, nowadays, it's just unbelievably stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe I'm just stupid.
How about this one?
Maybe I'm the dumb one. I don't know.
I don't think so, because you think about it, they're selling prescription drugs on there. They're constantly pushing down people's their throat. And it's like, go tell your doctor that you need this drug. And it's like, wait a second. It used to be the doctor would say you need this drug. Now you're going to the doctor saying I need this drug. How do you know that? Why they?
And then they tell you the side effects that it could kill you.
Yeah, that's half the ad right there.
Right there. I said, "Whoop, that ain't for me."
It's like diarrhea, wait a second here.
Yeah, if that's all it was, but then they're saying, "Well, this could make your heart stop and your head, explode and all that kind of stuff."
What if depression or? But what if it just was the one? One thing is this constant diarrhea. Would you take that medication? Yeah. I don't think most Americans would.
No, I don't know. They must be selling stuff or they wouldn't be spending money to advertise it. So somebody's doing it.
But it's so weird because half the ads are that prescription stuff. And it's that's why it's so weird to me,
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, what was we going to do? Oh, the Stoic thing?
Yeah, the Stoic thing.
I forgot what we were going to do. Well, this isn't for everybody, and I'm sure of that. But, I try to listen to it once or twice a week and try to learn it better, learn what they're saying better. And this might, you might want to listen to this a couple times over to really let it sink in. But I don't know. It was, what's that guy? Marcus Aurelius was my hero.
He's
my
a good guy. Yeah.
Favorite emperor, yeah. Roman emperor.
Probably the best emperor, in my opinion.
Yeah, and Seneca I didn't really know, but he's a pretty smart guy. And Epictetus is definitely, and I don't even have a clue who he is.
He's a good guy, too, yeah.
Yeah, well, he came up with some pretty, you got one tongue and two ears.
That's right.
That's where that saying comes from. That was his... I heard that from him first, and it makes sense. You listen twice as much as you talk, and you'll be much better off.
Right.
Silence is golden. That's where it came from. Him.
Right.
So, all right. Well, let's what do you want to cue this thing up and give it a roll, see what happens. And we'll see you all next week.
Right.
Okay, this is how we'll end today.
The art of not caring is a pivotal concept in the art of Stoicism. When you master the art of not caring, it allows you to be in total control of yourself. Others can no longer influence you or take control of you. Number one, focus on what you can control. As Epictetus stated, the chief task in life is simply this, to identify and separate matters so that I can say clearly to myself which are externals not under my control and which have to do with the choices I actually control. When something happens that upsets or frustrates you, pause before reacting. Take a few deep breaths. Then carefully consider what parts of the situation you have the power to influence versus what parts you do not. Channel your energy into areas within your control, such as your perspective, attitudes, and response. Let go of attachment to wanting to control or change anything outside yourself, other people, external events, the past, the future. You will only drive yourself needlessly crazy. Serenely accept the bounds of your own realm of agency. This act of focusing only on what is within your power creates freedom. You break free of the endless disappointments caused by wanting control over things ultimately not up to you. You gain mental space for purposeful action. Of course, work to improve challenging situations when that is within reason. But without attachment to particular results that rely on external factors, your fulfillment comes from your values and choices, not controlling what is not yours to control. Number two, accept that life is imperfect. It's human nature to desire order and predictability. We wish for things to make sense and go according to plan. But inevitably, challenges arise, people make mistakes, and suffering occurs. Things will never be perfect. When you expect or demand perfection from life, yourself, or others, you set yourself up for constant frustration and disappointment. Demanding that things should be other than what they are leads to anxiety, anger, and resentment when reality refuses to comply. Instead, acknowledge imperfections and direct your energy toward working with life as it is, not as you wish it to be. Respond artfully to difficulties as they come without judgment. Show others compassion for their flaws, as we all have them, and have self-compassion for your own shortcomings. Of course, continue improving yourself each day, but do so motivated by growth, not self-flagellation over failures or setbacks along the way. Progress happens slowly, in fits and starts. Make peace with the perpetual human condition of falling short of ideals. Recognize that the desire for perfect order often stems from a need for control and certainty. Have faith that you have the inner resources to navigate. Life's twists and turns, even when they are painful or frightening. Let go of needing it to be otherwise. Embracing the fundamental messiness and unpredictability of life is tremendously freeing. You stop struggling against the basic nature of reality and gain perspective to respond wisely to events as they unfold. Flow with life's ups and downs with equanimity, acceptance, and wisdom. Number three, practice mindfulness. It's easy to lose yourself in regrets about the past or anxiety about the future. But this squanders the only time that actually exists, the present moment. When you notice your mind wandering into reliving old memories or imagining future scenarios, gently bring your attention back to the current experience. Engage your senses. Notice sights, sounds, sensations happening right now. Regular mindfulness meditation helps strengthen your concentration muscles and ability to return to the present. Sit comfortably, close your eyes, and focus on the inflow and outflow of breath. When thoughts arise, simply observe them non-judgmentally and guide your attention back to the breath. Staying grounded in the ever-changing present prevents getting lost in mental narratives about the static past or imaginary future. Each moment becomes vivid and precious when you inhabit it fully. Keep redirecting focus to the present throughout your day. Appreciate the positive details whenever you can. A warm cup of coffee, laughter with a friend, the feeling of the wind. Presence fills life with richness missed when dwelling elsewhere. While planning for the future has its place, staying mindful of the present builds resilience. You trust that by engaging fully with each experience as it unfolds, you can handle whatever arises, good or bad. Number 4. Perspective is everything. When something upsetting occurs, it's easy to get swept away by subjective emotional reactions. But the Stoics advise taking a step back to view things more objectively before responding. When you feel your emotions intensifying, pause. Resist the urge to immediately vent or act while in a reactive state. Instead, breathe deeply and create mental space. Then look at the situation rationally from an outsider's perspective. Ask yourself questions like, is my response proportional to what actually happened? How might this appear years from now looking back? What's the wisest perspective to take? This mental exercise loosens emotions' grip over your thinking by putting space between the subjective reaction and objective event. With distance, you gain clarity to choose thoughtful next steps rather than reacting rashly. Of course, honor your emotions, but don't let them dictate your response. As Marcus Aurelius stated, if you are pained by external things, it is not they that disturb you, but your own judgment of them, and it is in your power to wipe out that judgment now. Remember that you always have a choice in how you perceive situations. Even painful events can be viewed as opportunities for learning and growth if you look for the upside. Our experience depends profoundly on chosen perspective. Number 5. Let go of entitlement. It's easy to feel you're owed a particular outcome just because you strongly want or expect it. But destiny unfolds as it will, not as we demand. Catch yourself when you notice frustrated reactions stemming from unmet expectations. Remind yourself that nothing in life is guaranteed. Events don't always conform to hopes and desires. Release the judgment that things should be going differently. Let go of needing reality to accommodate your rigid preferences. Accept that other people in life owe you nothing. You aren't entitled to get what you want. Instead of railing against a situation, reflect on what lies within your power. You always control your response, values, and how you use the tools currently available. Focus there. As Epictetus said, make the best use of what is in your power and take the rest as it happens. Give your full effort with equanimity, then let go of insisting life meet particular demands. Reducing entitled expectations leads to greater serenity and wisdom to engage constructively with events as they unfold. Your happiness becomes dependent only on your own character and choices. Expect less, and life naturally fulfills more. Number 6. Accept change. Nothing in life stays the same. Impermanence and change are woven into existence itself. Attempting to rigidly control or hold on to things as they are inevitable fails and leads to suffering. Reflect deeply on the reality that aging, loss, and death await us all. Relationships evolve. Circumstances change. The wheel of life keeps turning. Accepting change allows flowing with it artfully. When you notice yourself fighting change or clinging to how things used to be, pause. Remind yourself that resisting the fundamental nature of life only brings anxiety and disappointment. Release the futile attempt at control. After mindfully accepting change, move into courageously embracing it. Each transition contains opportunities masked as problems. Have faith that closing one door opens another you couldn't have imagined. Grow through periods of upheaval. Of course, honor what has passed and grieve losses mindfully. But don't become stuck mourning a faded past. Shift focus to the possibilities in front of you. By embracing life's dynamic nature, you stay flexible and able to respond wisely as situations evolve. As Seneca stated, every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. Trust the cycles of life. Accept endings that enable valuable new beginnings. Number 7. Judge judiciously. It's easy to criticize others' mistakes and weaknesses, but harsh judgment often says more about ourselves than them. Before negatively judging someone, pause. Consider if it stems from your own insecurity, arrogance, or pettiness. Does their benign quirk really merit your condemnation? Is it more a matter of personal taste? Examine your motives, also reflect on whether positive intent could underlie their offending action. Might cultural differences be causing misunderstanding? Remember, hurt people often unintentionally hurt others. Withhold judgment until you've walked a mile in their shoes. Focus criticism solely on issues that clearly involve injustice, cruelty, or harm. Even then, aim more to understand why someone would act that way. Judgment often blocks teaching moments and reconciliation. As the Stoic Marcus Aurelius stated, "When you wake up in the morning, tell yourself, the people I deal with today will be meddling, ungrateful, arrogant, dishonest, jealous, and surly. They are like this because they can't tell good from evil." Stay tolerant. Of course, offer feedback compassionately when it could help others improve. But avoid judging minor imperfections or matters of subjective opinion. Nurture growth in those around you by emphasizing their potentials more than their flaws. Number 8, forgive others. When someone wrongs or harms you, clinging to resentment ends up hurting you more than them in the long run. Of course, seek justice if you've been legitimately wronged, but be cautious about desiring vengeance. As Nelson Mandela said, resentment is like drinking poison and then hoping it will kill your enemies. It chains you energetically to what hurt you. Forgiveness doesn't mean condoning poor behavior or forced reconciliation, but you can forgive internal eye by letting go of bitterness and wishing the best for those who've hurt you, even from afar. This untethers you from past pain. Consider that hurt people often hurt people. The one who harmed you likely suffers from their own unresolved traumas and flaws. Have compassion while protecting yourself as needed. To let go of anger, dig beneath it to find the unmet need causing it. Things like security, respect, belonging. How can you nurture that need in healthy ways versus clinging to rage? Release and focus inward. As Marcus Aurelius stated, "The best revenge is not to be like your enemy." Forgiveness is an act of self-love that breaks cycles of revenge. Have courage and patience to let it heal your wounds. The present and future open when we forgive the past. Number 9, laugh often. Being able to laugh at the absurdities, ironies, and frustrations you encounter generates perspective and joy necessary to weather storms. In hard times, look for humor and levity in simple pleasures, funny animal videos, amusing observations, jokes with friends. Even when facing grim circumstances, a moment of laughter relieves tension and renews spirit. Don't lose your willingness to be silly and not take yourself too seriously. Being playful and amusing engages creativity and imagination to find the lighter side of any difficulty. Shared laughter and comedy strengthen social bonds and resilience. Our shared humanity gets reaffirmed when we can chuckle at common foibles and jokes that cut through differences. As Seneca stated, "If you have a cheerful heart, smile and laugh at everything." Humor turns down the volume on adversity. Problems get cut down to size when made objects of amusement rather than towering seriousness. Of course, let the depth of life touch you full eye, including pain, but balance it with laughter's medicine. Levity lifts you from despair and helps you bear the unbearable. Laughter heals. Number 10, focus inward. We have direct control over our own growth and habits, but very little control over fundamentally altering other people. Catch yourself when frustrated that others won't change to match your vision of how they should be. This usually leads to anger and resentment when the world refuses to bend to your will. Instead, turn attention back to yourself. What virtues can you cultivate? How can you lead by positive example? Model the change you wish to see rather than demanding it of others. As Marcus Aurelius stated, "Waste no more time arguing what a good man should be. Be one." We grow by doing the work ourselves, not just wishing others would improve. Inspire excellence through your own actions. Of course, lovingly help guide close relations who sincerely desire growth. But most people must come to it themselves. Judging or coercing them is ineffective. Allow them their own path at their own pace. Focusing inward on self-development brings serenity and confidence. When you excel at manifesting your highest values, You won't be as concerned by what others do or don't do. Tend your own garden first. The rest follows. Number 11. Live simply. Chasing money, status symbols, and luxuries rarely brings lasting fulfillment. Notice when you obsess over acquiring nice homes, cars, gadgets, or other non-essentials. Ask yourself, what void am I really trying to fill? Why do I tie my self-worth to appearances and things? Aim to live modestly, purchasing ethical, durable goods mindfully. Fulfill needs, but avoid excess. Cultivate pleasures that gold cannot buy. Time in nature, reading, loving relationships. Also reflect on the personal cost of valuing career ambition and gain over purpose and people. Recognize how consumer culture feeds ego and distracts from higher aims. Does it truly enrich your spirit? As Seneca stated, it is not the man who has too little that is poor, but the man who hankers after more. True wealth lies in developing wisdom and character, not expanding possessions. Of course, financial security eases life's stresses. But past a certain point, more money ceases to increase happiness. Avoid confusing the means of living with life's ends, virtue, service, and realizing your gifts fully. Number 12. Be humble. It's easy to inflate our own role and impact on situations, but in truth, many external factors are simply outside our control. Catch yourself when taking too much credit for when things go well. Recognize the role of luck, help from others, and variables beyond your influence. Don't get arrogant assuming it was all your doing. Similarly, don't blame solely yourself when problems arise external why. Avoid falling into shame and self-criticism when events don't turn out as hoped. You don't have total control over outcomes. As the Stoic Seneca stated, all is opinion and opinion is not truth. All depends on our senses, and our senses easily mislead us. Our judgments and perceptions are often distorted by biases. Maintain modest perspective about your importance in the grand scheme. Individuals come and go, but life continues. Do your part with humility, and find peace in living well, not pedestals. Of course, cultivate empowering self-belief balanced with unattached acceptance when things go awry. Aim to influence what you can without self-flagellation when the world has other plans. Number 13. Silence is golden. There is wisdom in resisting urges to speak impulsively and holding your tongue when it would be unwise or unkind to share your thoughts. Notice when you feel compelled to blurt out whatever crosses your mind without filter. Pause first. Consider careful why if voicing these reactions or opinions is necessary or beneficial before giving them wings. Also, be wary of excessive speech even when not overtly harmful. As Epictetus advised, nature gave us one tongue but two ears, so we could hear twice as much as we speak. Listen more than you talk. Before communicating, ask yourself, is this true? Is it kind? Is it useful? Will it improve on silence? If not, breathe and let the impulse to speak dissipate without indulging it unnecessarily. Of course, speak your truth with care when ethical and obligatory. But not every passing notion requires public announcement or debate. The cost is often needless discord and scattered energy. With mindful silence, you gather your mental forces and avoid much useless disturbance. Number 14. Amor fati. Rather than constantly resenting circumstances we find displeasing, the Stoics encourage mindfully accepting conditions as they are. When faced with frustrating situations, pause to reflect instead of just complaining or raging against reality. Ask yourself sincerely, how can I? Engage constructively with this, rather than resisting what cannot be changed. Lean into challenges and limitations as opportunities to practice virtues like courage, wisdom, and justice. For example, financial hardship can inspire voluntary simplicity. Illness allows developing fortitude. Betrayal improves discernment of allies. As Epictetus advised, do not seek to have events happen as you want them to, but instead want them to happen as they do happen, and your life will go well. Align yourself with reality. Of course, taking sensible action to improve conditions when possible. but accept what cannot be changed without resentment or self-pity. Maintain equipoise in facing life's ups and downs. Loving your fate means embracing the full spectrum of experience with mindfulness and good spirit. You stop fighting reality and turn obstacles into opportunities. Practice Amor Fati. Number 15. Memento Mori. Frequently reflecting on the inevitability of death provides helpful perspective when caught up in the small anxieties and frustrations of daily life. No matter how difficult your current situation seems, it is fleeting. You and everyone else eventually leave this world behind, along with all earthly troubles. Death awaits us all. Keeping this sobering fact in mind puts struggles in context. Rather than demoralizing, remembering mortality has an uplifting effect by clarifying priorities. Facing death openly, you realize how precious each passing moment truly is. Precisely because time is short, life's possibilities shine brighter. Memento Mori also instills us motivation to use your gifts fully and express love unreservedly before the chance passes. Imagine if today were your last day. How would you want to spend it? Cherish and savor the time remaining. As Seneca put it, let us prepare our minds as if we'd come to the very end of life. Let us postpone nothing. No one has promised us tomorrow. Live wisely and earnestly now. The present is all any of us are given. Of course, balance awareness of death with appreciating this transient gift of existence. But regularly reflect on impermanence. In facing your mortality, you find freedom to live fully.